Welcome into the latest edition of Serie A Awesome. Coming up this week, Inter win in their first game of the season, but they did little to shake their Pazza Inter tag. Can they lose that crazy tag? Antonio Conte hopes so. After Juve's sparkling season opener, things looked a lot more flat just 1 week on. So what went wrong for Pirlo and his players against Roma? Then up next for Juve is Napoli, who are looking dangerous. And even though their latest victory, a 6-0 win, still wasn't enough to please Gennaro Gattuso, is it a sign that Juventus should beware this Sunday? This and more on the way. Hello and welcome into the Serie A Awesome podcast. I'm Kay Murray. He is Matteo Bonetti. We've got lots to get through today, but we will be starting with the news of Inter returning to action in the Serie A, and they got that Pazza Inter tag. Now, for any of you who don't know what that actually means, luckily Matteo can I explain for us.
So Pazza Inter literally translate into crazy Inter. It was part of the old song Pazza Inter Amala, and it comes up anytime Inter have a result that is, simply put, crazy, where it goes back and forth, where they give plenty of heart palpitations to the fan base, and when they simply don't make it easy for themselves. And that's exactly what happened over the weekend in that crazy thriller against Fiorentina.
Oh, it was crazy. Yeah, it was against Fiorentina. It was a game they ended up winning 4-3 thanks to two late goals in the 87th and the 89th minute, but they had been trailing 3-2, and that's why the Pazza Inter tag came. But there's lots more to talk about with this game and Inter going forward, and that is why we are going to bring Mina Rizzucchi in to talk about it. So let's start, Mina, with the experience on the bench alone. It included Arturo Vidal, Alexis Sanchez, and Roger Nainggolan. Surely Antonio Conte cannot complain about depth now.
No, I mean, that's something that he's been jealous of from Juventus for a really long time, about how they can always pick and find these alternatives for them. That makes his job a lot easier, right? So right now, he was obviously able to introduce five substitutes that ensured the win. But I think what's important is that he needs the squad depth, because he doesn't always get it right when it came to making his decision on who should start. The starting lineup, I thought, was absolutely wrong when you're looking to face a side like Fiorentina. And thank God for him, he can introduce a lot of experience, and did so at a time when Fiorentina can't perhaps bring on the same type of quality, when they were tiring, when heads did go down a little bit because they missed their opportunities to take another lead going forward. And I think for him, for Antonio Conte, when he can rely on players to make the difference when his tactics aren't always right, then it makes the absolute difference for him.
So you're saying he didn't pick the right starting lineup in general?
No. I thought this was actually really bizarre, because when you look at this, for a man who talks about balance a lot, and for a man who always gets it right, I think, in terms of balance as well, I thought it was very odd that he decided to go for the back line that he did and the midfield that he did. So on their own, you sort of understand why he chose those three players in Bastoni, Kolarov, and D'Ambrosio. D'Ambrosio is a man who gives everything for Inter. Bastoni is the only real centre-back that they've got at the moment, because they're not playing Skriniar and Ranocchia. There's, you know, obviously with moves and stuff, that's, they're not really options at the moment. And so Kolarov has played in a back three before. So all of this on their own makes sense. But when you consider that they've just arrived at Inter, like Kolarov's just arrived at Inter, when you consider that the midfield has Brozovic and Eriksen, two players who don't really give you too much in the defensive phase, there isn't Gagliardini, who isn't the world's greatest player, sure, but he can at least offer a little bit more from a defensive approach, then I think that it was a side that was too attacking in many ways. Perisic on the wing, you know, Young, it was a side that always was going to prioritize going forward and not offer you enough defensive balance. And I thought that that was very strange to go with that, especially against a team that understands how to possess the ball so well, like Fiorentina, a team that made all the right decisions when it came to packing their midfield, ensuring control of that area, and leaving Inter absolutely unable to really maneuver as well and as beautifully and logically as their team has. I mean, the squad can move the ball well, and we saw that happen, obviously, when they scored two goals in 2 minutes. So we know that they can play well, but sometimes I just feel that the decisions made, too many vertical points in a side that really doesn't know how to hold possession, doesn't really offer balance defensively, very bizarre. But he had the substitutions, he had the experience and players who could come on and change everything.
Because you picked it apart as well, didn't you, Matteo, with what Mina was saying? There was a few positions that you questioned yourself when you saw that lineup.
I have two big problems with the lineup that Conte put out. And fortunately, we're not going to see that lineup probably ever again. Certainly not going to see it this upcoming weekend because there's wholesale changes throughout. But I want to talk about Alexander Kolarov, right? Because throughout his career, always known as a fullback that's much better going forward, a bit of a defensive liability, someone who struggled a lot of times with his positioning, with his one-on-one defending. And now they bring in Kolarov, who's in his mid-30s, who can't run enough in a Conte system to play his best position, which is left wing back. And by the way, I think that Kolarov at this stage of his career, the best thing he does is from the set piece, not in open play. But you're putting him as a center back. And by the way, I was on the commentary for the Serbia game and the UEFA Nations League where Kolarov once again was poor in this position. There's this whole thing now that, oh, it's a back three. We can convert fullbacks to center back. Kolarov was at fault for the first goal. He's never been known as for his defensive abilities. So you bring in the player who can't play his best position because he can't run anymore for what Conte wants from his wingbacks. That made no sense. Christian Eriksen, with all the midfielders around him, I don't care what you did at Tottenham. I don't care how good you were in the past. You're right now, he's a shell of his best self, and we haven't seen any glimpses consistently that he's willing to play to the level that he was years ago, because this is a problem that went back to his last season at Tottenham that he was so poor. And he's not going to start consistently with all the midfielders around him. I would have almost put Arturo Vidal as a center back. He can play that position. He played it for the Chilean national team. He's played it in the past. Put Milan, guess Milan Skriniar. Why are you selling Milan Skriniar? Because he doesn't fit in the back three, and Kolarov does? So Skriniar is being sold because he doesn't fit in the back three, but now Kolarov does. None of this makes any sense to me whatsoever.
Right. Mina, I saw your reaction when he said what he did about Christian Eriksen. Why did you react that way?
Well, listen, I think I agree. I think there's a lot of blame being put on Eriksen, where I think sometimes it's like, you know what you're getting when you buy Eriksen. It was interesting because when he was coming out of Ajax at the time, everyone was looking upon him as this great player, this one who really understands how to inject a lot of creativity. And when you think of his passing, his through balls, the assist that he's given in the Premier League, it's better than most players in that position in England at the time. But the point is when you get Eriksen, you have to provide full support for him. And that means he's the guy, he's the main one, and everyone rotates around him. You need strength, you need aerial ability, you need somebody who's a little bit more physical and robust, raiders who can go in and do something with the space that creates. You can't put him in that field, in that role, and then ask him to stop, adapt and offer a defensive thing, because you look at Brozovic, he can't defend either. And then it just all becomes very hectic for me. So Eriksen never made sense because, again, Antonio Conte is a man who likes to rely on players doing things as a collective, and he can't afford ones who are luxury side players. I agree with that. But my one thing is, why buy Kolarov? Why did you buy so many players sort of like you've got Sensi and you've got Brozovic and you've got Eriksen, a lot of, you know, creative guys, but no defenders really? That, and you want to sell Milan Skriniar? You've already let go of Godin because he was very old. So let's bring in another really old guy who's going to get done at the back. That makes no sense to me. And then also you're going to create so much by putting next to him Perisic, who has no defensive ability either, and overload that side with, how is there going to be balance? I like that Conte recognized that though, at the end at least.
And remember Perisic, when Conte first took over, he tried him as a striker because he said he didn't have the characteristics to play wing back. And now you're seeing him at left wing back. So fortunately in the second half, things were made right with the five changes, five players who probably should be starters in Inter and will be this upcoming weekend for the most part. And it was a completely different side.
So but tell Vidal, me about, sorry, Vidal is centre back. See, this is the thing I have with Vidal. I'm not entirely sure what he's going to be doing for this team, because he's great as a raider. And I think that what happened is in his last year with Allegri, for example, he's played almost the number 10. If you look at the way that he's been playing for Barcelona, a lot of the time he's the attacker. He was one of their top scorers in the end. He does too many different roles, and I'm not entirely sure right now where he fits into this, other than the fact that he's just this warrior tag.
Yeah, he's a rotational midfielder. I don't want him at center back either, but I'd rather have Vidal than Kolarov.
Okay,
that's the only thing I'm saying.
What can he do to address these defensive problems right now with what he has on his squad?
Well, this is the thing. Definitely don't let go of Milan Skriniar. Like, why would you absolutely let go of this centre-back? I think, you know, if you do want to play with... This is what I think is interesting. For example, you've seen Alan at Everton. He stands back and allows the fullbacks to attack. Now, Antonio Conte does have someone like Ashraf Hakimi. He has Ashley Young. They are players that are going to go forward and do something special for you. And so I do think that if he does have Kante from Chelsea, that would make everything a lot easier because you understand that this player is going to mop up. He has tactical understanding. He's one of the most intelligent midfielders that there is. And I think that is what can give you a lot of balance. It can launch the forwards and protect the back line. But I think, honestly, they need a centre-back and they need a defensive midfielder. And I think that's where they've made mistakes. And if they let Skriniar go, and obviously De Vrij is coming back in, he's absolutely wonderful. But There's a hole there, and I'm not sure how he can address this balance at the moment, because Ashraf Hakimi as well, he's very good at going forward, not as safe going back.
Let Skriniar learn to play in a back three. This was his first season in a Conte system where he's in the back three. He was 2 years ago, he was one of the best center backs in Serie A, maybe top three, playing in a back four alongside one other center back. Like, it takes time to go from a four to a three. So Absolutely. Let Milan Skriniar maybe learn it. We know how good he is when he has the right players around him, the right system around
young.
It. I get it. He can still, I think he's good enough to adapt to whatever it is that Conte is now asking of him in a back three. It's certainly a much better scenario than having Kolarov back there, because if you look at Bastoni, who was a revelation last season, Stefan De Vrij, one of the best center backs in Europe, and then Milan Skriniar, on paper, that is an excellent back three to have as your spine.
Well, why don't you have a back four? Play with Ashraf Hakimi, play with Kolarov if you want, Bastoni and De Vrij in the middle, and then, you know, and load it up with players on their wing that can actually provide a little bit of defensive, you know, strength if you do, and if you don't decide to go for a player like Kante or a guy who can offer you that defensive midfield role.
So is that something that you think could help them? Because we obviously know how he lines his teams up usually, but will he go for a back four?
No, he's going to stick with his formation. Conte's never changed.
This is what bothers me about Conte.
He has a system. He's not someone that is going to be a chameleon like a Stefano Pioli, for example, of Milan. Conte has a system. He tries to find players for that system, which is surprising that you now have Kolarov, who really can't fit in any of the two positions that he can play. But going forward with Ashraf Hakimi, who looked like a thoroughbred racehorse when he came on, I mean, just the pace that he has, he played a wonderful assist his first time cross into the box. He is going to give Inter a dynamism that they haven't had in a wide position since maybe a decade ago. That is a huge, huge signing. And I think when all the pieces fall in place, because that wasn't the best Inter 11, this Inter side is good enough and certainly has the depth, as we saw this past weekend, to challenge Juventus for the Scudetto, given the questions of Juventus, which we'll get into.
He did say afterwards that this is Antonio Conte, he said he needs to enjoy the process more, and he really does not want that Pazzer Inter tag. And you do wonder, though, if you can give him some leeway in that there were some new pieces, and it might take time for that chemistry to build, Mina.
You know what, if it was somebody who, even Spalletti, to be honest, I know not many people are fans of his, but I think that the difference with Antonio Conte is that he's so rigid when it comes to his tactics, and he's so rigid in terms of his views on his players. So he wants to tell them instructions, which is why there are some, like Danilo D'Ambrosio, he really accepts all these instructions and is happy to carry them out on the field. But there are others, like Eriksen, who need their freedom, or others who need to learn and to adapt to different roles, and I'm not entirely sure in that sense that Conte is very good at masking weaknesses. I'm not entirely sure he can get the very best out of all the individuals in this team. That's my only thing. I do like, though, that he's embracing the Pazza Inter thing and he's trying to enjoy the ride. I think that shows a certain level of him evolving, if you like. He is so keen to make everything a little bit like Juventus, what he's grown up with, right? He was captain, he was the leader of that side, and he's used to working in a very robotic and methodical style of what, you know, of play. He researches, he thinks about things for hours. When you compare that, Allegri would come in, throw the starting lineup and say, see ya, and then you come in with Conte, who's drawing things on the blackboard, and this is how you run it. It's a very different style. And he's come to Inter, who are a team that are very interesting in the sense that it's a roller coaster of emotions. So embrace it and try to roll with the things that you're coming up against and find solutions in that sense, rather than making this team just like Juventus, because it's not going to happen.
Who even is he anymore? We had a smile last week. He says he's trying to embrace the process this week. What's going on with Antonio Conte?
Well, maybe we're seeing the evolution of Conte. Maybe we were wrong. Maybe we're going to see him change formation and change all these sorts of things. We know Conte's strengths and we know Conte's weaknesses. He's been in our lives for a very long time. And the rotation thing you mentioned, I think, is interesting, right? Because that was seen as maybe one of the weaknesses when he does have a midweek match. And maybe there aren't the rotations that you should have. There's players that are tiring out, which is a bit of a thing that we've noticed as a pattern, right, in Conte's sides, that his teams tend to wear out in the second half of the season. His training sessions are notoriously grueling. But this is maybe the deepest squad that he's had since the best days at Juventus when he was a manager. I mean, this is certainly the deepest squad Inter have had since the days of Jose Mourinho. So I think that the excuses are going to fall on deaf ears this season if he even dares go that route in the post-match press conferences.
I think we have two things with Antonio Conte in terms of addressing the exhaustion. You're right. We've seen them always, you know, wear out towards the end. I think it has less to do with the physical part of it, but more to do with the fact that he is mentally exhausting to deal with. And I think with a lot of the time, what you see in players who are, if you are in a Champions League match and you've got this man just screaming instructions with you, looking so disappointed in your performance, then it's normal for you to start getting really wound up and feeling like you're being judged on everything and not being able to give your best, which is why I'm never sure of Antonio Conte in the big moments. I'm never sure of him in big European matches. And of course, we looked at how many times he lost to Juventus, he lost to Lazio, he's lost to various big teams last season. When it comes to managing moments, I think he puts so much pressure on a lot of these players that they end up being terrified, and that's where the exhaustion comes in. I personally think so. When it comes to him, it is about seeing what they can do in the big matches and whether or not their squad depth are in the key areas. What happens if they lose Lukaku? What happens if they lose De Vrij? Do they have enough backup for those two? We know they're stacked in midfield when it comes to a creative player. What else do they have?
Well, it's Lazio Inter this weekend, this Sunday coming up, and we can't talk about exhaustion at this stage of the season. What are you going to be looking out for in this match, Mina?
I think this is such an interesting battle, because when you look at Lazio, they don't have the squad depth, and that's the problem, especially because they have Champions League this season. But they do have superb balance in midfield, and that's the difference that I think, because they've got aerial ability, they have robust defending, Milinkovic-Savic is so good, Lucas Leiva is so good, Luis Alberto provides all the creativity, there's a tactical understanding between all of them. And when you look at that team together and how effective the wing play is as well, they are good going forward, they are good in midfield, they're good at defense, and they understand transitions. Now, when you saw the two sides take on each other, you looked at Antonio Conte's Inter, and it just looked like it was bullying the whole time, trying to get crosses in, trying to use their physicality against a side that knew how to construct play, but were also superb when it came to counter-attacking play. That is, Lazio are the definition of a well-balanced side. Their problem is they don't have depth, and I'm not sure that they can manage all the different challenges that they have this season. But what's going to be interesting is now he does have better midfielders, Antonio Conte. And like you said, he can't complain right now because he's got a good squad. So what's he going to do now? Is he going to be able to construct play and provide us with the balance that we've been searching for from Inter? Or will Simone Inzaghi win the tactical battle?
They won a game each in this fixture last season.
Yeah, they did. And dating back to 3 years ago, remember the final match day of the season when Inter and Lazio played each other, basically to decide who'd go to the Champions League, Inter won. But they've provided us with a lot of good matches over the last few seasons. Just really quickly on Lazio, you're absolutely right. They don't have the depth of Inter, Mina, but they have the continuity, same manager since 2016, yeah. Simone Inzaghi. And the best signings that Lazio have made are the players that they have kept, which is basically the core of all their players, like Milinkovic, Immobile, Luis Alberto, even Acerbi, who was a bit of a breakout.
Exactly.
So that does go for them. But as we saw in the basically post-lockdown with Lazio, when they have to play a lot of matches in succession and they have to start rotating, that's where it gets dangerous. We won't have that problem now. We're going to have two full-strength sides, so it makes it a lot more interesting.
Oh, we'll check back in with you and see what you thought of this one next week, Mina.
Looking forward to it.
We're delighted to now welcome into Serie Awesome Stuart Robson. He was on the call for Roma Juventus last weekend. Juventus twice going behind in this game. Ronaldo twice finding the reply. It finished 2-2. I'd like to ask you, Robbo, do you think Juve were lucky to get away with a point from this game?
Yes, they were, because obviously Rabiot got sent off and they were down to 10 men for quite a long period of the game. And really, Roma didn't make the most of it. But what I was really surprised at was the formation that Andrea Pirlo played. It was a back four at times when they didn't have the ball. Cuadrado was at left back. Danilo was at right back. But as soon as they won possession, Cuadrado went to become a left winger. Kulishevsky became a right-sided or a right wing back. And Aaron Ramsey, who I think was just meant to come in field slightly to join him in midfield, went where he wanted to. And that caused a major problem for Juventus. They couldn't press the ball because Ramsey was never in a position to go and close down the opposition's right-sided centre-half or wing back. Cuadrado was often caught high up the field, and that's why they were counter-attacked so easily. So there was a lot of problems with the way Andre Pirlo played, and the two midfield players, I didn't think, had enough creativity about them.
Yeah, for sure. And McKennie, Rabiot, I thought they were two of the poorest players on the pitch. It seemed like often there was too much separation between them two, who were basically sitting right in front of the back three when they were on the ball. But you talked about the wingback situation. I know that Dejan Kulusevski has been talked about as this incredibly versatile player. He can play central midfielder, second striker, winger. But at wingback, it reminds me of when Federico Bernardeschi was being used at right wingback for Fiorentina. It just was not the place to get the best out of him. You need Kulusevski, as we saw in round one when he scored a brilliant goal. You need him closer to goal, just like Dybala. You get those guys closer to Cristiano Ronaldo where they can interchange and play those triangles in and around the box. And then Juan Cuadrado, in round one, you had Frabotta, a kid coming out of virtually nowhere from Juve's B team, which plays in the third division, who played quite well. Why not just leave him in? Why tinker more and put Juan Cuadrado in a position that he's never played in before on the opposite flank? He's always played up and down that right-hand side for a reason. I thought that the changes were a bit strange, and clearly the team just missed creativity in the midfield, as you said, Stuart, and then the equilibrium, that it was too many attacking players, and it felt awkward that entire game.
Well, Kulusevski, when he was playing on that right-hand side, whenever the ball was played into him, he was up against Spinazzola, who was the left wing-back for Roma. And every time the ball came into him, because he's left-footed, the only pass he could ever play was back again to Danilo. So it stopped all the sort of momentum in their moves. And Cuadrado down the other side, when he did get into attacking positions, he's right-footed. Where's he going to come? He's going to come inside. And the problem that he also had, you've got a front two. And if you're going to play with a front two, they have to link up with each other. I can't remember once in the game when Ronaldo and Morata actually passed the ball to each other. There was no understanding between the two. Ronaldo, as he always does, was playing almost by himself. But Morata's hold-up play wasn't good enough.
Yeah, well, and this is something we talked about really quickly. Sorry, Kay, is Morata, they wanted to bring in Edin Dzeko. I think that was the plan A for his hold-up play. Morata's got a decent touch, but that's not really ever been his position, as this guy who holds up the ball with his back to goal. That's why you bring in Dzeko, to invite those runs right closer to goal from Cristiano Ronaldo, who's obviously not going to work as hard as the players around him. That's fine. You let him do whatever he wants. But Morata was virtually a ghost, and I don't see how you continue with this formation. I think Morata's fine off the bench. I think he's fine as a rotational player. But Juve's best 11 is very, very different from this one, Kay.
Well, Paratici says that Morata was the target before Dzeko. Do you believe him?
Not really. Morata, when he was at Juventus the first time around, I thought was outstanding. I thought he was going to be one of the best centre-forwards in the world football, because he had some magnificent games. I remember one in particular against Bayern Munich away from home in the Champions League quarter-final, I think it was, where he ran the two centre-halves ragged. He kept on making runs down the side. His hold-up play was really good. He looked as though he was going to be a threat in the air as well. But when he went to Chelsea, he didn't do anywhere near the same sort of... he didn't perform in anywhere near the same sort of way. And I think he's a confidence player. When his confidence is high, he looks an outstanding player. When his confidence is low, he looks as though he's weak. He looks as though he can't see the next pass. He looks as though he can't get hold of the ball. And at the moment, he's a player out of confidence.
Yeah, because how does Andrea Pirlo go from one week getting it seemingly so right in the opening week and everybody with this glowing praise, oh, here's this Juventus that we've been waiting for, playing this style of football that we've been waiting for, to this, the following week?
Okay, so the tinkering was expected, right? You have a manager who's never managed a game in his life. He just had to give his coaching badges days before the opening season. So he's still trying to figure out what his best 11 is, right? So you look at the players on the bench, Arthur, Bentancur, I think they figure in the best starting 11 that Juventus have. And that's the creativity that they desperately needed. We didn't get it from Weston McKennie, who I thought had a good first game, but really tailed off in the second one. Rabiot was so poor throughout. And you have Bentancur and Arthur, who bring that creativity, who bring that touch, that vision that Juve desperately needed last season. That's why they swapped Miralem Pjanic for Arthur. Arthur gives you that extra bit of talent in the midfield that Juve so desperately needed. So I think the best starting 11, obviously Matthijs de Ligt, who's been injured, he's going to be in that back line. So we're not going to see Danilo anymore playing as one of the three center backs. This is far from being the best version of Juve. And Pirlo right now is just trying to figure it all out with the players that he has at his disposal.
As for Roma though, Stuart, will they be ruining their failure to kill this game off, especially with Adrian Rabiot getting sent off?
Yes, because it was all in their favour, because they realised that they could counter-attack Juventus at ease at times, particularly in that first half. Look at when Mkhitaryan went past Bonucci and should have finished. That was a great opportunity for him. Then Dzeko, who we know is an excellent striker, great hold-up player, that chance he had when he'd done everything right, came back inside and then just passed it against the post. They were the big opportunities, and that would have made, I think, 3-1. Then he had another chance when the cutback came to him, and he found the goalkeeper. So they had every opportunity to win the game. They would be disappointed. But I thought also the manager, Paolo Fonseca, made a couple of mistakes. When you're in control of the game, and they were 2-1 up against 10 men, I think he made changes just to make changes, for the sake of making changes. He didn't need to bring on Bruno Perez at right wing back. I think Santon was doing okay there. Don't change defenders when you're winning the game, because there's only one thing that defenders can do, and that's to mess it up. And really, Bruno Perez did that when the cross came into the box. He didn't get goal side of Ronaldo. So that was a mistake, I think, by the manager.
You mentioned Edin Dzeko as well. That is something that's plagued him throughout his career, Matteo, missing sitters. Despite everything else that he brings to the table, that's something that constantly he gets criticised for.
And in Serie A, he's had that one season where he just exploded and he nearly hit 30 goals. But other than that, Dzeko is a player that can miss those sitters, that routinely misses easy chances. He does so much else off the ball, his touch, his passing, his hold to play outside the box. But Stuart, you mentioned one. I thought there were two chances that he could have put away inside the box, and it would have been a completely different game had he been able to convert them. But the thing that stood out to me, which I wasn't expecting at all, was the way that Roma was able to get the best out of the midfield position with Jordan Veretout. I thought was brilliant in this game, always driving forward. And I think it showed the lack of exactly what Juventus needed, which was that midfielder who could break through the lines and get forward like the players they had on the bench. And Roma, coming off a really bizarre week with the administration issues where they thought they lost a point, and to be able to get a point off of Juventus, I think they'll still feel quite hard done by.
Yeah, they lost all their points, and that's happened. But Fonseca seemingly upset before the game as well. You could tell in the pre-match press conference he was a little bit prickly. Doesn't seem like he feels supported there right now. Do you think he's got a point? Do you think he should be getting more support, Robbo?
I think he needs more support, because I think he's got a fairly decent side there at the moment. I think they're a team, and you just mentioned Veretout, who's a player that can pick out passes, he can make forward runs. Pellegrini dropping back from his forward position into that midfield, I think he's an excellent player. Again, technically very, very good. I thought the three centre-halves, Kumbula, who came in, looked really good. He looked quick. He didn't allow people to run behind him. Ibanez, I think, did everything right as well. The back three, apart from that one cross that came into the box, looked excellent. Mancini had the freedom of the park because Ramsey was never in position. So when they switched the ball out to him, he could get forward. So I think they look a good side at the moment, but they're going to have to play with a bit more consistency, and they're going to have to give the manager a bit of support as well.
Could they be a top four side this season?
They could, but there's some very good sides as well. And when you look at the results already this season, they're already falling behind. But they could, if they play to their potential, be a top four side.
Now, neither coach was satisfied after this game, but Matteo, which coach should be the most dissatisfied?
The most dissatisfied has to be Fonseca, right? That he didn't pick up a point. I mean, with Andrea Pirlo,
he did pick up a point, that he didn't pick up a win.
Yes, exactly. Without picking up a win, when Juventus are man down, Adrian Rabiot gets sent off. And I think for Juventus, it's going to take some time, just like it did with Maurizio Sarri, who actually never even was able to transmit the image that he wanted onto the club. Pirlo comes in. We saw the positive sides of Pirlo, right, in week one, with the way that the team was playing vertically, the way that they just look quick. It was the kind of football that Sarri was supposed to bring all along. But Juventus, to me, and Roma, are they top four? It's going to be difficult because the rest of the higher end of the table has gotten so much better. But Juventus right now, when you look at all the players who can't come in, the reigning Serie A MVP, Paulo Dybala, who's yet to figure, who's obviously going to be a starter in the best team that Juventus can field. When everyone is fit, this is still the best team in Serie A.
But Stuart, do you foresee any problems for Juve against Napoli?
If he goes with the same system, I can see lots of problems. Because, and we didn't really, haven't really mentioned, the one player that I think was is the cause of all the problems was Aaron Ramsey. Because I don't think he was detailed to go exactly where he went. He was meant to be just coming in off that left-hand side to allow Cuadrado to make runs down the left, and that was the change of shape. Ramsey coming from an outside left to another midfield player, Cuadrado going from a left back to a left wing back. But Aaron Ramsey, and I've seen him many, many times over the years, he lacks tactical discipline. He wants to go and where he wants to get the ball, and he wants to go and score goals, he wants to create goals, but he does it at the expense of the rest of the team. And if they play with that same system, Napoli could tear them apart.
Do you think he just got too much confidence after last week when he was one of the star players for Juventus?
Well, he was finally healthy, right? I mean, that's a huge thing. Last season, he was supposed to come in last summer and basically be a starter, right? The idea was he can make those second runs outside the box. He can give you a few goals. He can play a few assists. I think we saw the best that Aaron Ramsey can be in week one, where he seemed to be the glue guy between the midfield and the strikers. He obviously linked up well with Cristiano Ronaldo and Kulusevski, but a completely different performance in round two. Same with Weston McKennie. And the biggest question to me, Stuart, is who exactly is the best midfield and how long will it take Pirlo to find that unit? Because all the other teams that are competing for the Champions League, which is where Juventus need to be now with the final years of Cristiano Ronaldo, it is Champions League or bust. They didn't sign Cristiano Ronaldo to get the 9th and the 10th consecutive Scudetto. All the other teams, for the most part, I'd say, at the higher end of European football, probably know what their best 11 is or are pretty close to finding it out. We still have a lot of question marks about Juventus, don't we?
Yeah, and Bentancur has to play for me. I mean, yeah. I think he's got to play in the Pjanic role, not because he's a great passer, but he's a good passer of the ball, but he's also got that defensive quality. He's got an athleticism, which means he can get around the field. So I think he has to play, and then they build the midfield around him. Bentancur has to be the main midfield player.
Stuart, before we let you go, just because it is your first appearance on the pod this season, who for you is the biggest threat to Juve's title this season?
Oh, without doubt, Inter Milan. If they play at their very best and Conte gets the best out of the players that he's got and he gets his system absolutely right, Lukaku and Martinez up front, they're the real danger for Juventus.
That is something all of you pundits agree on. Stu, great to have your insights. Speak to you again soon, my friend.
Absolute pleasure.
Well, the team that are up next for Juve and Napoli, a Napoli side who are looking good, but their last game brought with it quite a big problem, given that kickoff was postponed by 3 hours because Mattia Perin tested positive for COVID. So a new round of swabs was necessary for the entire squad. They found Lasse Schöner also had it. And it now turns out that there have been 14 positive cases at Genoa. Genoa's sporting director have said that the team are all in quarantine and they won't be able to play against Torino this coming weekend, because you need at least 13 players and there's 14 there. We don't know what's happening with the latest round of tests. Then Napoli's medic Vincenzo Merone is concerned about how difficult it's going to be to organise the away trip to Turin due to the necessary swab tests for coronavirus. So Napoli are going to continue going through tests as the week goes on. More tests will follow on Friday and there will be final answers on Saturday. You have to say, Nicky, it is not the ideal situation to be going into such a big game.
No, I mean, it's definitely hugely complicating. And of course, we're a podcast and news may have overtaken us by the time this comes out. But certainly going into a huge game early in the season, Napoli against Juventus, Juventus against Napoli, in fact, it's going to complicate preparations a great deal for Napoli. One thing that crossed my mind even, given how lopsided their game against Genoa was, we don't know that none of those Genoa players had some sort of symptoms that they hadn't recognised yet that were making them perhaps below what they could have been, below 100%. It's such a subtle line, I think, a lot of the time with illness. It's not as clear cut as, oh, I'm, you know, in bed and can't move, or I'm at 100% to go and play elite level sport. So hugely, hugely complicated moment for Napoli and for the whole of Serie A. I remember during last season when we came back in the pod after the interruption, the lockdown, the number one thing we were talking about was what happens when players start getting sick. And we thought it was inevitable and actually it didn't really happen last season. And now we're going to see it. Now we're going to find out what happens. And my fear is, yes, if this transmission spreads as, you know, in the nightmare scenario where, of course, you've just had all these Genoa players on the pitch of the Napoli players, if it spreads through that Napoli squad at the same rate, it's going to get very complicated very quickly, because on top of everything, I think everyone sort of looks at these players and thinks, okay, once you've got it, you have to isolate for 14 days. Think about Paulo Dybala over the summer and how he kept having positive tests. It's not even as simple as that. It's not as simple as you get this and you know, you're out for 14 days. People get really sick, and some people, even when they're not really sick, keep testing positive. So it's a hugely, hugely complicated moment for Serie A as a whole, I think.
Yeah, it really is. And it's going to be interesting to see how the weekend does play out. But let's assume that everything is going ahead. And let's look back on what we did see from Napoli in that last game. It was a 6-0 thrashing of Genoa. Now, we don't know, as you said, whether the team was fully healthy going into it. Gattuso still wasn't happy with his Napoli side afterwards, despite the 6-0 result. But one player that he can definitely be happy with is a player we were talking about last week, Nicky. It's that Victor Osimhen, once again, didn't score, didn't need to because of everything else that he did in this game.
Yeah, I know. You look and you think club record signing, €70 million in a 6-0 rout, didn't score. And if you didn't watch the game, maybe you'd think something wasn't quite right. It's the opposite. He is so immediately part of that team in a way that I'm just in love with. I think when Napoli signed Milik, they wanted this sort of big, tall plan B, because you've got what Gazzetta dello Sport famously dubbed the Marvelous Smurfs, which used to be Dries Mertens, Lorenzo Insigne, and Jose Callejon. Now in comes Lozano, still fits the bill. But then you had in Milik this sort of big target man, something more classic to work around. And it was fine. Milik had some good moments, but it didn't really come together. It kind of became an option A or an option B. Osimhen, because he's got the physicality and the height, he ticks that box, but he plays like one of the Smurfs. Like his footwork, the flicks he's making, the way he runs. I saw an extraordinary stat from Ligue 1 last season where I think he was only him and Mbappe recorded more than 6 sprints over 35 kilometers an hour. So he's fast. Like he really, really moves. And I think the way he is instantly integrated into that attack is striking, because that isn't easy to do. And I mean, gosh, the lineup that Gattuso sent out to start this game with Insigne, Lozano, Mertens and Osimhen all on the pitch, it's a heck of a lineup. It was fun to watch.
I think in the first round, Gattuso kind of stumbled upon, well, maybe we can throw in that extra attacker. Maybe at times we can only play 2 central midfielders. The thing that surprised me the most, though, Nicky, about Victor Osimhen, watching all of his tape, all of his assists, all of his goals, you could see that he's lightning quick. You could see that he's a good finisher inside the box, just spanks it into the bottom corner. What I was shocked with is you're coming into a Napoli side that now for a very long time has traditionally played this more quick passing, high press, attacking style. Napoli, I think, over the last decade, even back when Mazzarri was a manager, they were an entertaining side for different reasons, but always entertaining. And I was wondering, does he have the touch to really link up well with these players that are so, like Mertens and Insigne, that are plucky and shifty and love those quick little touches and drawing triangles all over the box? He has been better than I could have ever imagined. And when you see the transfer fee and you see, right, we've seen big transfer fees with Lille players that haven't quite worked. I mean, just look back at Nicolas Pepe, went to Arsenal for so much money, player that Napoli was linked with. But with Osimhen, he's doing so much more than just scoring, which is why you cannot look simply at the goals with attackers. There's so many more variables and factors. And we saw them all. He didn't get a goal out of the 6. I saw the scoreline. If I didn't watch the game, I would have said, right, Osimhen surely had a brace or a hat trick. Nothing. But he did so much more off the ball with his runs, creating space. I am loving this player. I really am.
Do you know, there's one other thing which I think is really sort of hard to pin down, but this is one of my drums that I feel like I always bang. Players and identity and how they fit into a certain place. And I think that the best, the most successful sort of imports to Naples have always been the ones who you feel like have a little bit of that street footballer in them. Dries Mertens fits it so perfectly because the football culture of Naples is that. It's playing in the little vicoli, in the little side streets and, you know, dodging the mopeds and all that. I know it's a cliche, but every footballer I've spoken to who came up through Naples has talked about that as part of their upbringing. And I think you have to have that joy of working in little spaces. And for such a big guy, he does. He enjoys it. He's there having fun and working in little spaces. I think he's wonderful.
It feels like no fan base falls in love harder, but also falls in with the hatred harder as well. Just don't leave to Juventus.
In and out
from Napoli, and you're good to go.
Or you might end up with your face on some toilet paper, which is what happened with Higuain. Yeah. Now, you mentioned the fact that Insigne and Mertens and playing with them, but both of them love him. They've gone on the record to say so. The bad news, though, is that Lorenzo Insigne went off injured in this game, and it looks as though he's going to be out of action for 3 weeks now. That's a big miss against a side like Juventus, Nikki.
It is. The one thing that crossed my mind is, I mean, I think it was talked about, Andrea Pirlo was a bit reckless this week with his lineup. And I think if Gattuso had gone with the same lineup he faced Genoa with against the same lineup that Pirlo fielded at the weekend, that would have been chaos. It would have been just too much overcommitment. So at least now it almost forces Gattuso. I mean, it was a 4-2-4 against Genoa, frankly, the way they lined up to begin this game. Perhaps it sort of forces you into a bit more caution. You're also aided by the fact that Lozano, who did not have a great first season in Naples, really looks like he has started to find something as well. I thought that his first goal was just, it was so Callejon. Like the way he makes that run at the back post.
Back post run, exactly.
Yeah. And that's great. That's perfect. That's exactly what Napoli need him to be able to do.
He bought shares in the back post during his time in Napoli.
No, he did. And Chucky Lozano, there was an apparent fallout last season behind the scenes with Gattuso, where Gattuso maybe wasn't in love with maybe the lack of enthusiasm, or, you know, he'll weed out anyone who's being lazy, won't he, Gattuso? He expects that sort of intensity behind the scenes. And it seemed like Lozano's tenure at Napoli was going to come to an end and be seen as a big flop with all the money that they spent for him. And also how good of a player we saw Lozano being with the Mexican national team in the Dutch league. Obviously going to Serie A is a big step up, but he's been essentially been played slightly out of position his entire run with Napoli. Mm. Lozano is at his best as a left winger, but you're joining a team that already has Lorenzo Insigne, who is the default left winger, Dries Mertens, who can play there and has in the past, but can also play centrally. So Lozano's had to carve out a very different role for himself on the other flank, where he can't cut in and he can't go for goal as much. And now he's showing that he can also be prolific on that side, on the right or down the middle. I'm very surprised by Lozano, the way he's taken off, but I'm very glad because Napoli really invested heavily in him.
Well, don't forget, Matteo, I think when you look at what he came into last season, the first half of last season, you come into a team that ends up in full mutiny against the ownership, that has the owner coming into the locker room and getting shouted at. It's hard to adjust sometimes to a different league. And I think what Lozano came into last season cannot have made that easier.
Well, I have to say, Gattuso did not hold back in his comments after the game, despite the fact that Lozano's looking better. He said, "I'm not giving Lozano any leeway. He's a different player now. When he arrived, he was not at 100% mentally or physically. He would kick the ball and fall over like a child. Now he has strengthened his legs. I knew Lozano from his days at PSV. He always attacked down the wing, but last season he wasn't at his best at all. He's now playing because he's in good shape." So he's told it like it is. But one thing with Gattuso is that the reason he's saying he's upset after this 6-0 win is that he's still talking about balance in this side and that he wants more balance from his side in the games that they're playing. So what does he mean by that, Nikki?
Look, I think, to be honest with you, I don't sort of read a huge amount into this. I think lots of very successful managers actually prod their teams the hardest when they're doing well. Because when your team is already sort of losing a bit of confidence, when things are going wrong, you need to cajole them a bit. You need to be kinder, because if you let people get too far down, they might not come up again. Whereas when things are going well, that's when you can pick holes in the performance. And sure, you know, I'm certain that Lozano probably could have done more tracking back at points in that game. I'm sure all of them could. But actually, the way Napoli played against Genoa was relentlessly on the front foot. The pressing game was what led to several of those goals in the second half when it became the rout. They probably will need to be more balanced because Genoa were awful and Juventus are going to play a lot better. But I think a certain amount of this is just keeping his players sharp in the mind and not getting too relaxed ahead of a really big game.
Well, perhaps the good news is that it really does look as though Kalidou Koulibaly is staying, Matteo.
Yeah, and there wouldn't have been any natural replacement for him, someone as good as Koulibaly. And sometimes we're victims of having short-term memory, right, with some of these players like Koulibaly, who's coming off a season. And Nikki, as you mentioned, there was a coup with Ancelotti, left mid-season. Gattuso comes in, doesn't start well for him, and then it goes a bit better down the line. But Koulibaly definitely is not coming off his best season with Napoli. He had injury problems. He was really out of form as well. He made some uncharacteristic mistakes as well when he did play. But we know him better than that. And we know what he's capable of when he's at his best and really who he is as a defender. So losing Koulibaly and what has happened with Napoli down the line in the last decade, anytime they've made a big sale, think back to Edinson Cavani, where they bring in Higuain, Callejon, and Raul Albiol, they always buy smaller pieces. So Amir Rahmani, who came over from Verona, obviously isn't as good as Koulibaly, simply said. So they would have bought little smaller pieces here and there, but no one, I think, of the quality and the impact that Koulibaly has when he's starting.
This team will be better if Koulibaly stays. I don't think it's guaranteed yet, so let's not be totally certain on that. But if he stays, the team will be better. I might even go so far as to say that they can compete for the title. I don't think they're the favorites by any stretch, but I think they can compete for it. But the one thing that sort of is in my mind is that Aurelio De Laurentiis, who hasn't always been popular with the club's fans, he is very good at balancing the books, and he always balances the books. I don't see how you balance them this season without selling Koulibaly, having spent that money on Osimhen. That's why I'm still a bit sort of skeptical that we'll get to the end of the transfer window with this being the way it is. If it is, I don't know. I really right now.
Yeah, as you said, we don't know what's going to happen because obviously the transfer window doesn't close until early next week. But how dangerous are Napoli? You say that they could be title contenders. Nikki, what do you think, Matteo?
I think as a dark horse, you know, that's a brave pick, but why not? Based on what we saw in the last game and also in the second half of Napoli's first match of the Serie A season, they're definitely showing a type of, well, first of all, they have chemistry, right? Because a lot of the core players have stuck around for a long time. They know each other well. And it seems like Gattuso's really hammered in an identity with this club where they can fight for him, but they can also play that beautiful football that we've known Napoli to play now for a very long time, especially with this core group of players. They definitely could be a team that it's almost like we all forgot that Napoli were for 3-4 years the anti-Juve, the team that was pushing Juventus all the way until the last round of the season a few times. So why not? Why not Napoli? I know that Inter, it's great that they've bought all these players, but that's actually a brave pick and one I agree with. Let's put Napoli as anti-Juve B to Inter's anti-Juve. How about that?
No, you can't start having that.
I still have Inter as my number one challenger, okay. But Napoli is my number two. Why can't I just say that? Do I need to just pick one?
Nikki, will I move up the pecking order for you before we go?
Look, I picked them last season to win the title, actually, because I thought that bringing Manolas in with Koulibaly would be something really special to build on. And they were already the closest challengers to Juventus. I still have Inter as the closest rival, but I'm definitely putting them in the conversation right now.
Well, maybe if the game is to go ahead this weekend, Napoli can change all our minds, and we will revisit this topic on Serie Awesome next time we all speak. Thanks, Nikki.
Anytime.
So before we say goodbye to you today, as always, we'll let you know which games Matteo is on this weekend. Just the one for you on ESPN this weekend.
Yeah, Atalanta-Cagliari, 6:30 a.m. Eastern time. And as if we've learned anything, Kay, it's always watch Atalanta, a goal-scoring machine, and it should be quite a thrill.
Yeah, it really should be. And as always, you can catch all the latest that you need to know on Serie A clips and everything on ESPN FC, on YouTube, the digital page on ESPN.com. You'll see the stories from the likes of Gab Marcotti. So make sure you check in there. But that's it for us for this week. We'll be back same time next week. Thanks for listening to Serie Awesome.